Ecological Aesthetics, Artful Tactics for Humans, Nature, and Politics, by Nathaniel Stern and read by the author. Ecological Aesthetics is published by Dartmouth College Press, part of the University Press of New England. This audiobook version of Chapter 1 is offered for free under a Creative Commons non-commercial license. It was recorded the morning of April 12, 2018, in one continuous take in the Digital Humanities Lab at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. There have been very minor edits from the original for flow. It includes the in-text glossary definitions toward the end of the recording, but excludes footnotes and fully referenced citations, the latter of which are available on the book's website. For that and more information, or to purchase the full book, visit ecologicalaesthetics.net. Ecological Aesthetics, Artful Tactics for Humans, Nature, and Politics. Chapter 1, about this book, Arguing, Thinking, and Telling Stories. The question is not, what does this artwork mean? It is, rather, what does this artwork do? And in that case, we must also ask, what does this book do? This book argues, even though I often tell my graduate students that text as things do not argue, that writers should rather assert themselves in their theses, say it with me, with this book, I argue. But this book does argue. The fact of matter is that it all argues. Matter perceives. Matter moves. It feels, and it thinks. Matter perceives in that it takes account of its surroundings and shifts trajectories of becoming. A tree grows around that tiresome river or toward the light of its fancy. An electron jumps and swerves from atom to molecule and eventually finds its desired equilibrium. A cliff erodes against water and wind, perhaps eventually crashing into the sea. The sea then moves in and around, a torrent of intervening waves and currents in its new and always ongoing composition. And matter changes as it moves as well. A molecule's proximity to another changes density. Jumping electrons change the molecule, and so on. Matter feels outward and perceives and moves, responds and reacts, then feels and perceives and moves and changes once again. Matter thinks and argues. Perhaps not in the way a human consciousness thinks and argues, and this debate is discussed in chapters 3 and 9, but any dash thing, and certainly this book, can be said to be part of, as intellectual historian Nicole Ridgway calls it, an event of thought. Is thought exclusively human? Only in as much as my own thoughts are exclusively my own, and they almost certainly not. Other thoughts and ideas and arguments preceded what I think, and these changed me, my thoughts, my ideas. These other thoughts were themselves not completely original, were birthed, transformed, and amplified by other things, both human and non-human. Artists and artworks, writers and writings, books and the internet and the various pages therein, the earth, the sky, that blue, this light, the fact that I lost my keys or they lost me, the day I originally typed this very sentence. Side note, aforesaid keys do not agree that they belong to me, or even that we belong together. They are often co-conspiring with pockets each other, gravity, and a plethora of other collaborators of this, I am sure, so as to make me look bad to my colleagues and peers. Each of these bodies is a force on thought, a force of thought, a thought in the act. And so, when I say that this book argues, or as I prefer it, that it thinks, it, like any of us, never does so alone. Thought, Ridgway via Foucault reminds us, is not restricted to the experience of the thinking subject or to the manifestation of subjective thought and discourse. This is a thinking with, similar to philosopher Jean-Luc Nancy's being with, where with is not an addendum to thought or being, but its very precondition. For Nancy, being is never isolated between individual things. It is always in the world and in relation, or better said, of the relation. Being is always being with. And this book argues that thinking too is a relation. This book thinks with me and everything I was and continue to be, with you and your continuity, with art and artworks and time and space and words and ink and paper and more. It was a force of many things before I and my computer began typing, and will hopefully, act as a force, however small, even beyond its own various physical instantiations. That said, I am sure your screen is affecting your eyes, or the weight of the book affecting your arms and hand, or my voice pulling you in as you read or listen to this text at some point in the future from my original writing and recording. Thinking. This is always moving and feeling as well as thinking across a multitude of actors and fields. This book thinks with art. not art with a capital A, as in its techniques or ideas or largest category, but art, lowercase a, as in individual pieces and series and events. The former, art, capital A, encompasses practices and objects that enable, facilitate, and are an adventure in and around thought. Art does not illustrate or philosophize, but helps to create an encounter and experience that has us think anew and then continue practicing new thoughts. Art is one place from where thought may proceed. The latter, art, lowercase a, connotes specific artworks. After all, it is not the category, but a work of art that does things, thinks, and provokes thought. And in this book, art and writing, thought and intervention, activism and installation are always already practiced together, moving one another, setting each other on their way. This book, as art and writing, thought and intervention, activism and installation, continues that moving with and thinking with and feeling with. Around a dozen or so artists and artworks ranging from print to installation, bioart to community activism. It proposes and enacts an action, a conduct, a practice of experimentation outside the safety of the category, be it medium, form, or self. Each chapter narrativizes with art our experience and practice of complex systems and forces, an experience and practice of thought. Thought is, perhaps, what resonates. Thought is that moving back and forth between what philosopher Brian Massumi sometimes refers to as the stable, spatial ordering and disruptive eventness between what happens and how we understand it, between affection and reflection. Intensity of experience and extension of it, perception and action, presentational immediacy and causal efficacy, appearance and reality, vision and narrative revision. Vision is never vision alone. Because of sense-based memories and cross-modal perception, I know what that cherry-slatted wood table I see will smell and feel like, that there may be something sticky if I slide my hand along its underside. I know whether or not it would hold my weight were I to stand on it. Crossmodal perception is when sensation and memory carry perception to our other senses in just this way. Vision, like thought, is an action and practice, a doing that carries the potential for doing more. And narrative revision proposes yet more, seeing more, doing more, wandering and wondering, thinking. Thought is always of the relation not only between polarities like affection and reflection, they're not dualities, but between every dash thing and the moreness things can and might produce together. Thought and art amplifies how it is that we are, and more importantly asks how we could be. Thought in this way, is the project of this book. It uses as its tactic and facilitates as a framework a going back and forth between vision and narrative revision. Defined more extensively in Chapter 3, a tactic is an agile, material, and detail-oriented, tactile, approach to making change. It is opposed to a strategy, which takes a more institutional or structured and less flexible approach towards specific ends. And a framework is a more loosely defined structure, e.g. a classroom, vocabulary, or set of tactics for experimentation and thought. The book's core contribution, then, is not a concept or thesis per se, but a model of thinking with, a practice of generous and generative thought that can and should be practiced. The connective tissues between sections and thoughts are at some times explicated, at other times implied, and yet other times still stretching themselves out and about, forming and folding, being and becoming, learning and thinking with art and artists and me and you through its style of looking and showing and telling with as argument. Style is, after all, not only the manner in which we do things. It is the look and feel, the sensations that try to make sense, the aesthetics that make a case. In this, Ecological Aesthetics, the book, is not a survey of a certain kind of art. It, in fact, purposefully avoids explicitly defining what gets to be eco-art, as such categorizations imply value or the lack thereof, whereas this book's goals are to find value in thinking with. Nor is this book a theoretical text that uses art only to support the ideas contained therein. It is not attempting to be the definitive book on either ecology or aesthetics. Rather, it attempts to do what art and aesthetics can do at their best. In the 2015 New Materialisms issue of Cultural Studies Review, the journal's guest editors ask how we might consider aesthetics beyond the assessment of cultural expressive patterns, and instead as the initial impingement of the world's materialities from physical locales to mediatized textures upon us. Art and aesthetics, I continue, invite us to practice new and different kinds of encounter with varying modes of concern or sympathy or care through our ongoing activities in and with and as a part of the worlds we inhabit. Art and aesthetics intensify the width of moving and thinking and feeling. Aesthetics, both the term and its practice, conjure experiment and experience, internal and external. Aesthetics and art perform and examine togetherness, asking us how we might do things differently or better. This book and The Art It Thinks With is both an artistic and aesthetic project in this manner. It reflexively thinks with. Ecological aesthetics offers, that is, it frames, presents, and suggests a rhetorical practice that attempts to bind communities, local and global, through a commitment to pedagogy and broader access to theories of art through methods of storytelling that are always both personal and political, even though the art discussed may not always seem as such on first glance. It asks, what if we thoughtfully thought with in this way all the time? As Amanda Botsky's, who read an early draft of the manuscript, notes, the subject matter is precisely the deepening of awareness and appreciation of connectivities, relations, events, and the unfolding of reality at different registers and scales. Here, its impact lies in its consolidation of an art community and putting weight on the significance of local interventions and aesthetic engagement. The sometimes little-known artists are meant to be exemplary for any and all communities, and the style and organization are precisely where its contribution is most noticeable, like a gentle manifesto moving between strong statement and rich description. Like one of many predecessors, relational aesthetics, ecological aesthetics does not present a theory of art, but a theory of form, a structure, a framework. It recognizes and asks us to re-cognize, that is, think again, conceptual material formations around art, thought, and us, and explicates their implications. It creates narratives on, about, and by the various cross-sections of humans, nature, and politics in and as works of art. Look, it screams, this art has subtlety, and both it and that are relevant. Relational aesthetics, coined by Nicholas Burio in the 1990s, takes as its frame human relations and their social contexts rather than an independent and private space. While much of this art still takes place in the gallery, it is in front of the piece, where people meet and chat about it, that the work happens. Prints, videos, and traditional objects may be analyzed through relational aesthetics, but the work is also often a proscenium for action, a staged event, and/or a call for participation. And relational antagonism follows a critique of relational aesthetics from Claire Bishop, where she asserts that by introducing some forms of antagonism into art-based events and relationships, participants will more successfully be engaged with democratic processes than when simply confronted with a relationship toward no specific end. Ecological aesthetics, then, takes the being with of people, ideas, and things as its aesthetic framework. Thinking and moving and feeling, matter and concepts and time, humans and nature and politics are all part of the same relational field, creating, transforming, and mobilizing themselves and the others together. Ecological. And in this book, I present the tactic of stylized narrativization to have us encounter and concern ourselves with what can and is said, shown, experienced, or practiced with a work of art and the world, how and why, and most importantly, the stakes therein. Aesthetics. This book thinks and asks us to think with the world. People and peoples are always in process with the world around us. We are only a small part of intricate, complicated, and ongoing systems. We are always more than the boundaries of what we know or feel or make. Ecological aesthetics, both the book and the aesthetic, I believe, is surfacing in contemporary art and art criticism and philosophy and politics and elsewhere, makes such linkages felt and thought. Here, ecological isn't limited to its everyday definitions around environmentalism or biological organisms, but encompasses thought-felt encounters with the relations between all of matter and its ideas, which are vibrant, vital, energetic, lively, quivering, vibratory, evanescent, and effluescent. In his thoughtful, pun intended, and provocative plea for a more radical openness and coexistence, Timothy Morton calls the realization of our interconnectedness the ecological thought. I am asserting, rather, that all thoughts and thinkings are generated, dispersed, and interfered with, affected, affective, and affecting in and around that interconnectedness. And the best of art intensifies the sometimes seemingly at odds connections we have as individuals, people, stuff, things, propositions, and more importantly, it presents how we move and are moved, continuously changing those relations, and thus ourselves and the world around us. Such art can and should be experienced, practiced, and studied through the ecologies at play in and around and as their work, be they material, conceptual, environmental, personal, social, economic, and or otherwise. At stake here is nothing less than what might be learned from or can occur with any given system and its outsides, its slash their affects and effects in and around. As philosopher Jacques Rancière so often reminds us, aesthetics are not so different from politics. Politics revolves around what is seen and what can be said about it, around who has the ability to see and the talent to speak, around the properties of spaces and the possibilities of time. In brief, it is the struggle for recognition from an unrecognized party in any established system and the perceptions and activities that sustain or change that order. And here we must open up our definitions of politics from the narrow terrains of policy and the democratic process, institutions and civic society. We must instead move and think and feel around an everyday politics of matter, people, and things. Political theorist Jane Bennett avers in her 2010 book Vibrant Matter, A Political Ecology of Things, that it is a political act when people distribute themselves into racially and economically segregated neighborhoods, regardless of their intent. Perhaps they're just following a trend, though it affects finances, crime, and transportation. And it is likewise a political act with impact when invasive species, such as zebra mussels, move to Milwaukee, or worms migrate to the savanna forest border, changing how we fish and or moving the border itself. Political acts are activities ranging from seeing, showing, or moving to making, breaking, or taking that sustain or change systems of power. Politics and power are played out on all levels. And aesthetics, Rancière says, refers to a mode of articulation between ways of doing and making, their corresponding forms of visibility, and possible ways of thinking about their relationships. It is, perhaps from Rancière's perspective, the style of thinking with and its expression that influences and sometimes enacts politics. And it, too, plays out on all levels. Here, I continue, aesthetics is not merely about art or philosophy. It helps us sense and think, predict and act. It is the orientation with which we might approach any and everything. Both aesthetics and politics, Rancière asserts, present forms of consensus and dissensus. The former is what is accepted between sense and sense, between a fact and its interpretation, between speech and its account, between a factual status and an assignation of rights. It is a supposition of identities and their power, what is regarded as proper. The latter, then, is a demonstration of a certain impropriety which disrupts the identity, which no longer consents to the status quo. Stephen Corcoran, who translated and introduced Rancière's dissensus on politics and aesthetics, explains that dissensus is not simply a reordering of the relations of power between existing groups. Dissensus is not an institutional overturning. It is an activity that cuts across both forms of cultural identity belonging and hierarchies between discourses and genres, working to introduce new subjects and heterogeneous objects into the field of perception. Dissensus is an activity, political, aesthetic, or otherwise, which intervenes in established and accepted hierarchies of power. Each of politics and aesthetics attempts to reorient general perceptual space, and disrupt forms of belonging. They're not the same thing, but politics has an inherently aesthetic dimension, and aesthetics an inherently political one. Politics always unfolds, and its speaking always requires an aesthetic and a narrative to go with it. It is played out over the image of society. And aesthetic choices are also often political ones. They have implications including and beyond those we think about and intend in their making. Politics and aesthetics need, transform, create, and mobilize each other. This book is a part of, while also engendering, emphasizing, and calling for a broad cross-section of materials and disciplines, artworks and artists, thinking and being that engage with political and aesthetic compositions in just such a way. Perception and action, relation and reality, rules and exigencies, etiquette and transformation, possibility and accountability, meaning, doing and making, art and world and us, thought. There will be a number of terms played with, fluidly thought and rethought, problematized and reimagined alongside artworks and thinkers throughout this book. This is a productive disruption, another tactic for thinking. And so it is occasionally, though not always, accented. Glossary-esque boxes appear, they really want to be apostles or marginalia, within and alongside the core text. These terms, as well as others not highlighted in the same manner, continuously define and redefine how we might think with words and movements and thoughts and feelings. They annotate, critique, and illuminate, make strange and or make sense of the stories they are a part of. And the occasionally bolded phrases in each section highlight, disturb, and connect various thoughts on their way. They summarize and punctuate, making it possible to either enter deeply into reflective thought or parse the entire book lightly for its overarching feel. The ongoing definitions and accents, disruptions, are also both tactics for narrativization. They're part of an ecological approach that both practices and models what this book recognizes and simultaneously calls for. Stories. Stories that think and change, stories that deconstruct and distill, stories that make and provoke new stories, new pasts, presents, and potentials, all felt and thought both affectively and on reflection. Artist and writer Aaron Manning asserts that an ecological approach is one which takes as object a field of mutual influence and co-adaptation between processes that are actively shaped through that interrelation in a complex coordinate evolution. Said another way, by Stephen Lamb, human and non-human agents are so deeply enmeshed it has become difficult to separate one from the network of political, economic, industrial institutions that exist today. Every dash thing emerges from and with all things, and we must see and speak and act, politics, make and make visible, aesthetics, think them all together. I do that with stories. Simple, but precious, and perhaps a bit too rare in current critical discourses. This book encourages you to tell stories with, of, matter and meaning, thinking and arguing, influencing and changing. They should be terminal and incipient, implicating and explicating. With the two former terms, remember that terminals, whether for buses and trains or stories, are often beginnings and middles and ends. With the two latter terms, I'm referring to the Latin roots implicare and explicare, infolding and unfolding a topology of humans, nature, and politics. Humans, nature, and politics, too, are always already part of one another. The tree and river that feel and move and grow will affect the humans who want to build and fold and inhabit nearby, play a role in the politics that unfold for space, energy, and voting districts. Electrons and what their desire for equilibrium can accomplish en masse when pushed a bit by fuel to enact machinery run hospital equipment, enable me to chat with family overseas or look up reference texts online. They also start wars in the Middle East, cause horrible oil spills in the ocean, change policy, economics, votes, and more. Electrons and electricity do not do this alone, but their actions, their thinkings and feelings, perceptions and responses most certainly perform with. I do not wish to take agency and responsibility for wrongdoing away from the purveyors of U.S. congressional redistricting, the warmongers of the first or second Bush administration, or British Petroleum. But like Bennett, I do believe that an attunement to our surroundings, to the agentic capacity of humans and non-humans at play, the matter that matters, could make for more ecological and more materially sustainable modes of production and consumption. Says Bennett, we are much better at admitting that humans infect nature than we are at admitting that non-humanity infects culture. For the latter entails the blasphemous idea that non-humans, trash, bacteria, stem cells, food, metal, technologies, weather are actants more than objects. Bennett argues that everything is, in a sense, alive. Following her, some of the questions I and this book and many artworks together ask are, what if we paid attention not only to what such actants do, but also what they want? What would it mean to listen to trash, bacteria, stem cells, books, to this tree or that electron, to the wind, the road, plastic bags, the art market, or our blood? What if we showed them a level of concern we normally only reserve for ourselves? Bennett calls for a touch of anthropomorphism that might find a world filled not with ontologically distinct categories of beings, meaning subjects and objects, but with variously composed materialities that form confederations. Could an ecological and aesthetic approach such as this lead to an exponentially increased responsibility on our part, an ongoing and active encounter with the intimate interrelations between matter and potential, life and movement? What would a book that attempts such an ecological approach look and feel like? How might it think and argue, do what matter and art and aesthetics and politics do in its stories? Apparently, I believe and hope it might look something like what you are currently reading, or in this case, listening to. And how, then, might its readers or listeners, that is you, be most engaged? Please, write in the margins. Add your own apostles. Respond, take notes, scratch, fold and tear, sketch and play, argue and retell, make art and writing, curate and reflect, redefine and reimagine, approach and look for life, and yes, beauty and thought. Take this book to the movies, or the beach, or out to dinner. Feed it, and feed off of it. It may change its mind, or yours. Look up the artists, their families, their Wikipedia and Facebook pages, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter feeds, or whatever the cool people are doing these days. Go see their work, or email them, or me. Think with, and feel with, and move with. Don't think objectively or subjectively. Think contextually in their or your or many other contexts to find new meanings. What would this art or politic or person do on Mars or in Saudi Arabia? How would it change in a greenhouse or after exposure to thousands of years of direct sunlight? What if it weighed nothing or had the weight of the world locked in its core? Yes, I asked questions like this while writing, and you should too. Could you do that differently? Should you, in much the same way? What if, how might, why not, where to, who else? Resituate, speculate, wonder, and propose. More than anything, I ask you to take on this book's project by telling your own stories of art and writing, ecology and aesthetics, person and peoples, nature and politics. Open yourself and your world to alternate narratives, possibilities, and potential, swirling in and around us, on the virtual cusp, always just beginning to unfold. Continuously draw them out, as I and this book and art begin to do. Think of and with it as an ongoing inauguration. And though this book argues, arguing back with this book may or may not be the most productive way to engage. As Bertrand Russell is often quoted to have said about studying philosophy, the right attitude is neither reverence nor contempt, but a kind of hypothetical sympathy, until it's possible to know what it feels like to believe in its theories, and only then a revival of the critical attitude, which should resemble, as far as possible, the state of mind of a person abandoning opinions which they have hitherto held. Ask yourself, how is it that I and this book have come to understand this art and life and thought as doing what it does? Could you take that on? Or if you choose not to, could you still take on the aesthetic style of this book yourself, its politics? What then would you resituate, speculate, wonder, and propose? How can you alter that experience? What else can you experience? Why do I believe this practice is of value? Can you practice this? What, you might ask, is worth practicing? And how might you experience or enact change once you practice this? What else might change? This book, and the art narrativized within it, is both a political and aesthetic project precisely because it asks for Russell's hypothetical sympathy across looking and seeing, thinking and feeling, making and doing, humans and nature and politics. What does that electron believe? This tree think? That street path desire? What do we want? And why? For whom? This book asks this and more, and asks us to ask this and more, aesthetically and as a political choice. In my last book, Interactive Art and Embodiment, The Implicit Body as Performance, I asserted that every body, human or otherwise, is three bodies. It's always moving material form, how it is understood in representation, as information or in language or images by others and or itself, and its virtual form. By virtual, I mean potential eventualities that are felt in the present. With my body, I am and do things in the physical world. That's material. I also see it and talk about it. Representational. And if someone throws a ball at me, as that ball comes toward me, I have the potential to smack it out of the sky or catch it or do nothing and let it hit me. Ow. All of those possibilities and others are present before they happen. And those possibilities, of course, impact what I do now and what will happen. That's virtual. Both human and non-human bodies, their materiality, representation, and virtuality all interrelate and emerge together. We are ongoing events. We are more than embodied. We are an array of bodies, nested microbiomes and foreign entities always interacting and composing in what we are and do and what we perceive and interpret and what we might become. Following this, I argued exterior and interior forces perpetually fold in on each other, all moving and thinking and feeling, constituting both us and the materials, ideas, and habitats around us. We must therefore, I went on, affect a doubled agency in how we take account of and engage with our surroundings, both human and non-human. And now this book aims to put forward a broader approach to the making, engagement, and understanding of contemporary artworks and stories, texts, and practices that have a sense and make sense of our own and our surroundings, relentless transformation and agency. It thinks with art and artists that have us rethink human and non-human relations as always mattering, always affecting, always political, together. And it asks us to bring those ecological aesthetics back to the everyday. But this book's project is not simply a light metaphorics of symbiosis and infinite relationality which damns everything as always political, also making nothing political. The artist discusses, like so many more, consciously use aesthetics to try and make or have us think with and strive for changes in power, thinking, seeing, and knowing. Is an abstract digital image as political as a public calling out against austerity? The more important question is, what does each do and how? And asking and answering that question, too, does things that might make change. This book attempts to synthesize much of the work already happening in various artistic, philosophical, cultural, media-oriented, and political domains, and then reach outward with the matter, materials, and voices therein, narrativizing their hopes and desires, arguments, and thoughts. It doesn't make claims for new ways to reconfigure the persistent dichotomies of nature/culture, body/thought, concrete/abstract, etc. But in these troubling times, it asks, what can we do? Aesthetically and politically, locally, and within a given or other context. In the last century and more, specific domains of ecological knowledge have helped to generate and grow many political theories and movements, for example, animal rights, environmentalism, and Occupy Wall Street. According to Eric Hurl, in his brilliant collection edited with James Burton, General Ecology, the New Ecological Paradigm, there is hardly any area that cannot be considered the object of an ecology and thus open to ecological reformulation. These range in the thousands, he asserts, including ecologies of sensation, perception, cognition, desire, attention, power, values, information, participation, media, the mind, relations, practices, behaviors, belonging, the social, and the political, to name a fraction of those already called into action. And this book shows and calls for Artists and their artworks, viewers and how we think and feel, move and act, and the ecological stories and aesthetic orientations between them doing what such theories and movements do. Art is an actual expression. It is with us in the room, gifting us local and intimate contexts for thinking and feelings. Stories are virtually expressed. They thoughtfully open connections and they contain the potential for action. Together, they tell us the stakes, political stories or otherwise, and bring those stakes into the room for experience and practice, and back and forth and again, vision and narrative revision. They inspire and birth change as well as each other. Which brings us to ecological aesthetics, artful tactics for humans, nature, and politics. Narrative is this book's core artful tactic, in that the tactic is itself artful via the creative stories that unfold. And of course, the works of art presented in this book too deploy their own artful tactics. These tactics are for humans, nature, and politics, in the generous sense of the word, like I am for equal rights, and also in the generative sense of the word, humans, nature, and politics use these tactics for themselves and each other. And all of these categories, awkward yet necessary puns aside, interrelate in and as continuous ecological aesthetics. Every chapter of this book works on its own, is a complete story that thinks and asks us to think, and between each chapter are very short transitions, ... marked by ellipses indicating a pause, omission, trailing thought, and or invitation to think beyond those, ... that separate and connect how they function. Taken together, all the chapters make a broader argument with the varying artworks, languages, and tactics for thinking with. Thinking with artists and artworks, thinking with ecologies and aesthetics, thinking beyond what we think we already know. We begin in the commercial art realm, New York City and Art Basel, Miami. Artists Jennifer Dalton and William Pajida, with the support of gallerist curator Edward Winkleman, facilitated a series of events known as hashtag class and hashtag rank. Here, the pound sign, pronounced hashtag, is a commonly used shorthand for searchable terms on social media, like Twitter, Instagram, and so on. For hashtag clash and hashtag rank, in a commercial art gallery and fair respectively, artists, critics, academics, dealers, collectors, and other participants analyze the way art is produced and viewed, and identify and propose alternatives and/or reforms to the current market system. Meat Market, hashtag class, hashtag rank, and art world ecologies introduces Felix Guattari's three ecologies, psychic, environmental, and social ecologies, which parallel my human's nature and politics, and his ideas around how what he calls integrated world capitalism, IWC, corrupts and damages each of them apart and together. The hashtag clash team questions where non-monetary value can lie within a system that sells work, e.g. contemporary art, which artists often paradoxically mean to be a gift, something to be thought with and learned from rather than profited off of. The team amplifies instead of attempting to reconcile this tension, poking fun at themselves and others while asking very hard questions over a month in a Chelsea gallery, as well as several days at the most renowned commercial art fair in the world. They present a microcosm of IWC. They facilitate community dialogue around utility and humanity across online and real-world spaces, problematizing what is, in order to open new possibilities for consumption and production. We then travel to Durban, the third largest city in South Africa, where Mauritian-born artist and architect Dung Anwar Jahangir's failed attempts at suicide resulted in a new life of walking and talking, teaching and learning between his habitat and communities. Inspired by Michel de Certeau's Walking in the City, Jahangir continues this book's argument in showing us the difference between tactics and strategies and the importance of vulnerability in the everyday. He takes interested parties on long walks around Zululand, and his politically charged but always generous artwork is literally an experience and practice of movement, a relation to others and their/our environments. In Organic Intelligence, Walking, Living, and Attuning Systems, Jahangir points out what he calls the organic intelligence of cities, society, nature, emerging ecologies. Creative juices, animal instinct, playful improvisation, and battling blood takes a detour out of the human-scale domain and enters the world of biological art. Bioart most commonly sees the practice of working with live tissues, bacteria, and/or other living organisms, though some artists working in medicine with life processes or who intervene in the biotech or medical industries also consider themselves bioartists. Kathy High's Blood Wars pits participants' white blood cells against each other in a petri dish and literally puts a microscope on the relationships between playing and fighting at various scales. Her work has this book wonder about the supposedly very low stakes in play, how that encourages experimentation and risk, and then suddenly the stakes become high in what we might discover. High and her Australian collaborators continuously narrativize with the cells they work with, asking questions around consciousness and biological ecologies and all the things that contribute to each. They build stories that achieve a sympathy with the material agency in what blood does, as well as bringing to the fore the potentials of and relations between games and war, action and meaning. Ultimately, High exhibits play as itself a strong and immersive tactic for finding new tactics and possibilities, styles, and approaches to our activities. Next up, an interlude. Broken down as inter, meaning between, and ludic, as in playful, called Free, Open, and Wild, Art and Technology for Social Change. Further Field, co-founded by Londoners Ruth Catlow and Mark Garrett, have developed an entire system of art and events, websites and publications, gallery spaces and workshops, listservs and radio shows and more that empower individuals and communities to be activists and change their worlds, simultaneously amplifying the complexities of online and real-world relationships and highlighting what each have the potential to bring to bear. Theirs is a story of storytelling and story making. Whereas the popular technology movement accelerationism of the 2010s speculates on, accelerates, and/or repurposes the elite usage and growth of technology and capitalism and one or the other social impact and/or collapse, depending on whether you are left or right of center, Further Field instead puts cutting-edge technology into the hands of non-expert locals to see how they play, the stories they tell, and the politics that unfold from those stories and plays. The results are both funny and quite serious. Every artist interviewed for this book, and their projects discussed, takes on different tactics for humans, nature, and politics. Each section, too, produces various story forms that attempt to highlight that work. With Further Field, after some experimentation, I pushed my edits back into our original dialogue, finally presenting an edited version of our initial interview. My interviews are intended to showcase the relational and collaborative process in action as part of the book's project. This interludic section is laid out slightly differently from the others, designed to further accent the dialogical spaces Further Field facilitates and inhabits. Overall, it communicates seriously playful and playfully serious tactics towards progressive political change. Other frames, media, mediating, and immediate ecologies, stays in the digital domain, visiting new media's relation to the new materialisms, and tell some of their interwoven stories around time and scale, technology and agency, to put them in an aesthetically political, politically aesthetic, and ecologically relational context. New media is a difficult term to pin down, given that new is a relative term and media too is continuously redefined. In this book, please accept that I am referring to work that uses or engages with digital processes and/or forms, along with my apologies for using the phrase. More on the term in my first book. Malcolm Levy's prints and videos are reminiscent of glitch art, which purposefully makes use of errors in media storage and/or playback formats as part of its aesthetic, most often inviting an experience of media's materiality and/or our relationships to its concepts and forms. This artist's works present what happens when we accent how contemporary electronic sensors move and think and feel and break, at least in terms of what we have come to want and expect from today's consumer-based post-internet technologies. Post-internet doesn't mean after the internet, but rather after its incorporation into the everyday. Art and aesthetics that address the World Wide Web's and broader contemporary technologies' effect on culture, society, and dialogue. It's often talked about alongside the new aesthetic, which refers to the increasing use of machine and digital, new, media images and forms in our physical and aesthetic world. Glitch, drone videos, augmented reality, surveillance, and GPS-generated maps and views are all examples of the new born digital aesthetic. Levy and his materials, processes, and images challenge the standard narratives we tell each other about computers, what they are and do and afford, and gift us with new ones and thus new possibilities. Here, we engage with Richard Grusin's radical mediation and UC Parika's anthrop scene to speculate on, wonder about, and move around those human constraints we thrust upon our machines with microcontrol. What are their unseen impacts and ethical implications? Levy's other frames bring to the fore the materiality of digital information and images and tools and the inherent politics of how we make and relate to them. We then bring digital cultural practices into the community, more specifically the city where I wrote most of this book, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The Overpass Light Brigade turns left-leaning Twitter soundbites into collaborative physical messages that light up bridges for drivers and pedestrians to reflect on or participate in. With activist ecologies, singular pluralities in letters and light, we see how the team brings together individuals, each holding one lit-up alphanumeric character to display changing activist messages on highways and at rallies. Theirs is a community of practice, a ripple effect of connections always a part of and making bodies, texts, meanings, policies, stories. This section pieces together Jean-Luc Nancy's being with of matter and people and things, and, as we approach the terminus of the book, simultaneously exhibits the ecological connections of many and implicitly all contemporary activist practices. Sighing Waves, Love, Rides, and Climate continues that thread, while showing how stylistically different and subtle contemporary activist work might be. It begins by asking, what does political art look like? What does it feel like? What should it do and be? And these questions are particularly relevant not only to the never-seen-before levels of economic disparity and social polarization we find ourselves in at the time of ecological aesthetics publication, but also to the media landscape of alternative facts and propaganda that artists and humanitarian scholars have no wish to replicate. Jessica Finley's Aeolian Ride and Wyatt Tinder's Sighing Waves both explore weather and wind as potent actants in community building, relationship tending, and how we decide to move and be moved. They ask for an openness to, a generosity with, and a generativity for environmental and social justice, individually and together. Finley organizes public biking events that are literally shaped by both the wind and the group, and Tinder makes beautiful, generative video installations that have us encounter him, his partner, and ourselves, mediated through internet-collected data of crashing water and wailing winds. A graduating senior who worked with me at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee when I was finishing up the first draft of this book, Tinder asks, how does the weather change our feelings? How do the winds shape our love? How do the tides take our breath away? This section is collaboratively written with Tinder and is as experimental as the further field text. It moves between essay, artist statement, and interview, ultimately enabling, in fact pleading for, different aesthetics for ecological aesthetics. Concerned, Thinking Trees and Goods for Me goes on to contrast aesthetic versus ethical approaches to life and decision-making. In Sean Slemon's Goods for Me and other tree-based works, the artist pulls, breaks, or cuts down each of a tree's components, large and small leaves, various sized branches, the trunk and roots, and compartmentalizes them into individual frames like a cabinet of curiosities. These sculptural installations, which also house live bugs and ongoing decomposition, articulate nature and culture as continuously moving and thus changing together and over varying timescales. Here, we have an immediately felt experience, what Alfred North Whitehead calls self-enjoyment, and Eduardo Cohn calls an aesthetic of the immediate, which also has us concern ourselves with the before and after, with the outside, that both made for the occasion of experience and where, with our help, it might be heading afterward. Overall, this section argues that style and aesthetics, wonder and beauty, can have us think with and thus aim toward a better future. And finally, with GROW, Plastic, Mood-Based, and Communal Ecologies, metalsmith Yevgenia Kaganovich collects non-recyclable plastic bags all across the city of Milwaukee, then holds workshops where participants turn this waste into yarn and fabric and knit together bulbous plant-like structures with vines that continue to grow over years in various public spaces. Her small groups always have too much excess garbage to convert, but they make and feel a difference through community and mood-changing efforts. I tell her story along with John Dewey, Michel Foucault, Timothy O'Leary, and others to speak not only of art as experience, but art as practice. Here, this book and I argue that we must always remember we are in the world of doing things, and when doing, it is a combined ethico-aesthetic orientation, such as Kaganovich's, that can make for more sympathetic, sustainable, and practical practices. While I and three of the other artists slash artist groups I write about are from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, ecological aesthetics is by no means a regional book or practice. Wisconsin has been an especially politically charged area in the U.S. in terms of government, art, academia, and more. I discuss Wisconsin, London, New York, South Africa, and other regions as exemplary models for art and activism, ethics and aesthetics, in ways that represent and think beyond any specific political system. The everyday notion of representation could mean to depict or to present again, re-present, but Jean-Luc Nancy asserts that the re of the word representation is not repetitive, but intensive. Mental or intellectual representation is not foremost a copy of the thing, but an intensified presentation. It is a presence that is presented. The re in represent is, in other words, an amplification. To represent is to present more of what is. Thinking further still, representing could refer to the potency in and of the present. Here, we move, think, feel with our present and all the things, actions, objects, entities, and time itself that led to this moment and encounter all the things, conceptual, material, temporal, and otherwise, that might unfold from now. The present, and all that it is always more, is always present in its own fullness, and present as the things past and things to come. It can and should always be felt, both ecologically and aesthetically. To represent in this way is to present our present and more as a presence. Art does this. Stories do this. Things do this. We do this. We perceive and think with, represent and influence, concern ourselves and act. And so representation, whether fictional or true, physical or virtual, is the aesthetic in the how of its moreness, ecological via its with, and tactical in what it does. The artworks represented in this book engage with media and community, relationships and efficacy, local and universal forms of materialization and dialogue. They communicate and take on what ethical responsibility might mean in this, an age where hypocrisy is completely unavoidable and ever-expanding power is granted to an ever-shrinking few. Every aesthetic orientation is an ethical one, and vice versa. This book is an experience and a practice, a call for experiences and practices that takes account of aesthetics, ecologically and ethically. Its final chapter, Beyond This Book, Now It's Our Turn, asks you to do precisely this. Tell stories. Yours, each other's, the world's. Tell stories of the things that matter. Ecological aesthetics argues productively. In-text glossary. Definition 1. Thoughts both are and generate fields of force that open creative potentials in what might unfold. Thinking is, and facilitates, a practice of experimentation with the present aimed toward new futures. And thoughts can begin from, be transformed, amplified, interfered with, dispersed, or diminished by any dash thing. Definition 2. To narrativize is to make and tell stories about. The narratives proposed may or may not be true, but are more importantly like art, an experience and practice into different kinds of engagement. Thinking can be inaugurated or revived, transformed or amplified via art, stories, writing, individuals, groups. And in this book, narrativization as tactic attempts the experience that must be thought. Definition 3. Practice is both noun and verb. It is to experience and play, to think critically and experiment, to strive for something better in whatever it is we are practicing. Definition 4. Aesthetics, as it is discussed in this book, is 5 things. What can be said, shown, experienced, or practiced. What is said, shown, experienced, or practiced. How it is said, shown, experienced, or practiced. Why it is said, shown, experienced, or practiced. And most importantly, the stakes therein. It is, overall, an orientation toward thought and thus action. Definition 5. Affect is, most simply, unqualified emotion. My palms are sweaty, my heart is racing, I have butterflies in my stomach. Is this fear, anger, lust, all and none? The body knows, is, and does things without my knowledge, desire, or comprehension. Affect is an embodied sensation and response that does not have a name, .. And here, affection is a moving, thinking, feeling both before, during, and after conscious reflection, each influencing the other. Non-human affect is similarly matter's embodied sensation and response. It's knowing, being, and doing. Like a human body, its liquids, solids, and gases, its chemicals, cells, and other forms, matter's various bodies also sense and make sense in and with the world. Definition 6. An ecological approach takes account of and speculates on agents, processes, thoughts, and relations together. We concern ourselves with how humans and non-humans, matter and concepts, things and not yet things, politics, economics, and industry, past, present, and future, for example, are all actively shaped in and as their interrelations. We wander and wonder around how and why and where to for each. It is both an ethical and aesthetic practice to think and act with in such a way. Definition 7. The virtual is not yet, but still present as a force. It is the potential of what might become. And of course, what might be impacts what is just as much as what is impacts what might be. A very present force, despite its orientation toward the future. Thanks so much for listening to the first chapter of Ecological Aesthetics, Artful Tactics for Humans, Nature, and Politics by Nathaniel Stern. That's me. Also, a thank you to João Arequia for allowing the use of his song titled That Day. Again, for more information on the book, or to purchase the print publication in full, please visit ecologicalaesthetics.net.